That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Love this lady's voice.
What, mine?
Yes. The one lady I love. Okay. And welcome to Ladies Who London podcast. I'm Emily Dell.
And I'm Alex Lacey, and we're qualified London Blue Badge tourist guides.
Each week we bring to you some of the best bits of London.
We talk about our favourite bleeple places and events with the... why are we so terrible? I say we, me.
Mate, that was all you. I've done my line.
We talk about our favourite people, places and events with a bit of information, a lot of laughs and a whole lot of fun.
We can be found on Instagram at Ladies Who London Podcast and on our websites guideemily.com
and alexlacey.com for information about our upcoming walking tours and virtual tours, as well as what the Blue Badge guiding qualification is all about. Hello!
Bloop, bloop, bloop. Bloop, bloop, bloop. Hello.
Oh no, don't do that, because then I can't cut it out, you devil. You should be right up there, aren't you?
Sorry, darling. How are you?
No, you're not. I'm very well. How are you?
Yes, I'm good. I am, yes, very well. Very well.
I am so done with this summer. What is this summer all about?
The weather is
really shonky.
It is.
I can't bear it.
Yeah. It's just turned completely on its head, isn't it?
It feels like autumn. I'm not happy.
It does.
Not happy.
No, I'm guessing that you haven't been in the paddling pool this week.
It's cold now.
Oh, bugger.
Well, I haven't been in it because I don't need to, because I just go out in the rain.
No, true.
But anyway, how are you?
True. Yes, I'm good. Like last week, I've just been diving into the Olympics.
I'm obsessed. Love the Olympics and I'm just obsessed with it.
Any particular sport?
Anything that's on. I'll watch Olympic. I don't watch sport any other time, but when the Olympics are on, all bets are off. That's it. I'm in.
It's just so good, isn't it?
The other day was incredible. I've never watched BMX before. God. And it was the first
what was
kind
her
of
name?
That thing.
Beth, the woman? The woman
Charlotte
who won gold.
Wasn't it?
Oh, was it Charlotte? God, I'm just getting confused. Yeah, she was, so young. And just the tricks that she was doing was just... It just makes you want to go, oh, my God, I also want to take up that sport. And just know that you...
Yeah, no, I don't. I would not be good at BMX.
Oh, love that. And today, I haven't watched it yet. I'm going to do the climax, the highlights. The speed climbing.
Oh, the speed climbing,
speed like auto belay climbing.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah.
I'm in.
Yeah, seriously, like they go up this wall, they're like Spider-Man and they jump up within like 5 seconds. They don't really use their legs on the wall, they just jump up using their hands. It's
you
incredible.
Could totally do that.
Well, you know. Next year. Four more years, I'll be there.
Charlotte Worthington, there we go. That was the...
Oh, that's it.
But
Charlotte
I think there
Worthington.
Was a Beth somebody who won something else on the BMX. Another flippy, typey, BMX-y thing. I don't know.
Yeah, I'll pretty much watch anything apart from the cycling.
Really?
Yeah, that's
what
I was
really loving the cycling.
BMX, yes. I love that when the terrain is all wibbly wobbly. But the cycling... I appreciate it in terms
of. It was
so
exciting the other day.
Oh, really?
They cycle so fast.
Yeah, true. I don't know. Maybe I didn't give it enough time. But for me, I love the skateboarding.
Oh, I've not watched that.
I think that was last week. Gymnastics. Yeah.
Well, there we go. Anyway, enough of what we've been up to. This is just turning into a weekly catch-up.
I know.
So how you been?
I'm forgetting that people might possibly be listening.
Or and also not care. How are you guys? How are you?
How is everybody out there?
Have you all been watching the Olympics?
Let us know.
Before
we forget, Alex, I've got to do a bit of a shout-out.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, just a shout out to lovely Chloe out there. Chloe is one of our fans, one of our listeners, and he's always sending messages.
Fans, and I'll get you.
I know, right? You are a fan, aren't you, Chloe? Chloe? If she could talk back, she'd be like, yeah. So, yeah, shout out to Chloe. Thanks so much for listening.
And I've got to say hello and a shout out to Susan Thompson and Karen, because they have both... They've been with me from the start, from Global Tea Break, and they're coming into London in a couple of weeks to do some of the stuff that I've been recommending, like Greenwich and things like that.
Brilliant.
Hi to both of them, and they've both been doing my virtual tours, and I've not met them in real life, but they're coming into London, so
fantastic.
So I thought I'd say hello to them as well.
Hello.
Right. So we need to find out the results of last week's podcast pedestal. If anyone's new, then you might not know that every week, because we are slightly competitive, decide that we're going to fight it out to pick our best bits of the previous week's story. So last week you picked, so we talked about...
Jack Shepherd.
We did
indeed.
You forgot,
didn't you? You forgot.
No, I didn't forget.
Yes, you did. I saw the face. Yes, we spoke about Jack Shepherd, escape artist extraordinaire.
Yeah, amazing. I love him. He's so fun. He's so fun. And so your pick was the portrait that was painted of him by a rather famous artist, Sir James Thornhill.
Yes, I just thought that it was quite a good one because, you know, the fact that he came into Newgate Prison and wanted to paint him, you know, he was probably busy. I mean, he's doing the inner dome of St Paul's Cathedral. He's got all sorts of gigs around
London and around
the country. He's got stuff on. And he's like, hang on a minute. I'm gonna take a little bit of time out of my busy day and schedule and go to Newgate Prison. And I'm going to paint or sketch Jack Shepherd. So I think that really shows how popular or how, you know, what a character he was. People wanted to see him in the flesh.
Yeah, how much in the kind of public consciousness he was. And I love that thing about him being sort of a bit of a bad'un and a bit of a, you know, breaking out of jail and everyone's like, but this is cool!
Yeah, right? Yeah. The government are like, it really isn't. And everyone's like, let's write a book on him.
And my pick was the fact that he was so just cheeky and full of gumption that he, when they'd arrested him, he sat there with the guards and showed them that how he could pick his way out of the locks that they had him chained in.
Seriously,
which is hilarious.
Yeah, it
has to be better than that.
It's a really good one. And actually, when I was writing up the polls, I thought, in terms of the word aspect.
Oh, here we go, here we go.
No, I did think, you know, I can't remember how I put it now, but I did think, well, how should I put it?
I think you put showing the I can't remember now.
Showing off to the guards. So
possibly, yeah.
So
here she goes. It's all about the wording, isn't it? Because she knows that she's lost this week.
I do know, unfortunately, because I have seen polls. I've seen 2 out of 3 polls.
It's 35% to 65%.
Oh, to you, isn't it?
To me.
To you. Yeah. I'm not shocked at all this week.
Yeah, it's all about the wording.
It's fine.
Not about the content. Hilarious.
All about the words. All about the words. I don't know if you know this, everybody, but I put the polls up, so
whatever.
No, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Well done, well done. You are now one ahead. 22-21.
It's all pretty tight at the moment, isn't it? Well, let's get on to this week's one and see if we can't give me more of a head start.
Well, I'm excited this week because last week you said that this week was going to be quite sexy.
It's going to be sexy. Yes, it is. Because I am talking about a lady who I'm kind of fascinated about. During lockdown, one of the many tours that I decided I was going to write was one about the Georgian sex trade.
Whoa.
Because I know, right? Because it's something that's always fascinated me, the kind of the harlots and the boards and all of that. And I thought, now's the time, let's write it. I've got the time. And so I've been doing that walking tour a little bit last summer when we could, and then this summer as well, and it's turning into my most popular tour.
Excellent.
It's kind of fun and it's a little bit sexy, and some people have seen the Harlots TV show, and it talks about, you know, the kind of the story behind that. And one of the most famous courtesans of the 18th century, because the Georgian sex trade was enormous, and I'm not going to spoil my tour for people. I know some people who listen who have been on it already, but it was one of the biggest industries in London at the time, and it brought in about £20 million a year in old money. Yeah, it's huge.
Wow, that is huge
industry. And they reckon that one in five women in London at the time, at some point in their life, were involved in the Georgian sex trade. Whether that's directly or slightly tangentially, you know, is not 100% clear, but that's what they reckon. So it's an enormous amount of people. And of course, you have everything within that, because it was, you know, there are people are talking about how if it weren't for the harlots, the sex workers, that Soho and so other areas of London would be almost entirely empty, because they are taking up so much space. They are working, they're living, and some of them are making really, really good money. Not everyone, of course. A lot of them are, you know, it's hand-to-mouth existence and you're not making much. But where you've got the poorest of the poor, you're always going to get the richest of the rich as well. And this is where we get the amazing Kitty Fisher.
Meow.
Meow. And she's basically a bit of a Georgian it girl.
Oh,
she's incredible.
Okay.
So do you know anything about her?
Not much, no. No, I know the era, and I know that she was a little bit of a cheeky woman, shall we say, a little bit of a floozy.
is that your way of saying she was a harlot? Yes, she was. She was a courtesan.
She was a bit of a, you know, a bit of a cheeky one. But no, nothing, no details really. So I'm very excited.
So Kitty Fisher is, one of the things I love about her is she is a master of her own PR. She's born in quite what I guess the Georgians would term humble beginnings. In fact, she's been referred to her parentage as low and mean, which is always, you know, I mean, I don't particularly like the whole classism thing, but Georgians were quite a big fan of it. And that, you know, they were sort of saying, oh, well, she's from very low stock and whatever. And so the fact that she becomes one of the most, not just the most famous courtesans, but one of the most famous women in the country is really quite incredible. And the way she does this is by her own PR and really clever use of artists and poets and the media, all the way back before, you know, social media was a thing. If she was on Instagram now, she'd be bloody unbearable.
I was just going to say, she sounds like she'd be like an incredible mentor to so many.
Oh yeah, but she'd be, you know, she'd be Kardashian level, although I'd like to think that she's not quite the same. But anyway, but yeah, she would be, I mean, she'd be up there. So she was born, we don't exactly know when she's born. This is the thing about this Georgian era, is all the aristocrats and stuff, we know everything about, you know, you've got your Jane Austen view of society, which is all, you know, bowing and, oh, sir, Mr. Darcy and fountains and all that.
Bowing and bonnets.
Exactly. But the thing is, we don't know that much about the normal people, because one of the ways that we know a lot about people nowadays is due to income tax. Because every year you submit income tax and they have the information about who you are, where you live, what you do, yada, yada, yada. And that doesn't come in till the late 1700s. So we've got Kitty Fisher, who is born approximately 1741, possibly 1739. Reports vary. We don't quite know.
Okay.
We don't really know much about her early life either. Again, she flies under the radar because she's not a person of, you know, aristocratic renown or anything like that. So her young life, we don't know much. It's thought that her father might have been German.
Okay.
And possibly was a stay maker.
Oh.
Do you know what a stay maker would be?
I don't actually.
So the stays are the kind of things that you would put in, it's for structure really. So often in bodices, you know, boning in corsets and things like that.
Oh, right.
And also for hats and stuff like that as well.
Oh.
So this is what Kitty Fisher kind of, she sort of does this. She goes into being a hat maker, which turns out that it is actually quite a favourite trade of harlots, because you know, start out doing that, you can plug your gaps in your income should you need as well. But Kitty Fisher, and this is where, you know, we've talked about quite a lot of women on this podcast. And what's the one thing they always have in common? They are not going to take what they've been given as the end point.
No, very true. I think a lot of, well, probably nearly all of the women that we've spoke about are just absolute fire starters.
Hmm. And I guess they kind of have to be, because if you think really up until the 50s, 60s, 60s really.
Mm.
If you're going to be, if you're a woman that's gone out in history, it means you've done something.
Yeah, exactly.
It's
if
not
we're
that
talking
you're
about
just
them,
a man with a title.
Yeah, 18th century, then they've got to be a powerhouse.
Exactly. They've got to have something about them where they go, they either that or they've, you know, met some pretty sticky end, in which case, you know, yeah. we know sometimes know their name, not always. Case in point, Jack the Ripper, you know, we don't, well, we didn't until recently know too much about his victims. Anyway, I digress. So she decides, I'm not going to sit here making hats. I'm going to go and get the spotlight. I want a bit of fame and fortune. And I want that easy life and the comfort that comes along with it. And it's all about who you know, especially in the Georgian era. If you think about Jane Austen, you think, you know, it's all about introducing people to certain people and getting into the right, you know, the right circles and all that kind of thing. So she's like, that's what I've got to do. Now, do you know there's a nursery rhyme that has her name in it? Do you know that nursery rhyme?
Kitty or Fisher?
Well, both.
Oh. Kitty Fisher, Kitty Fisher, what a disher, what a disher.
You do know I edit this thing, right?
Can I kiss her? Is that another one?
You do know I can edit that right out.
Please.
No, it's Lucy Lockett lost her pocket. Kitty Fisher found it. Not a penny was therein, save for a ribbon round it.
Lucy Lockett. Wow.
Yeah. So okay. the words of that, now, you know, they've sort of changed a little bit over time, but this is the story of kind of Kitty Fisher and a lady called Lucy, who was a barmaid in the time when Kitty is sort of up and coming. So she does hat making, then she becomes a barmaid as well. Now, it talks about the two of them and the fact that, now there's a little bit of sort of chat about exactly what it means. And I have a separate theory.
Okay, here we go.
She's thinking she knows everything. But basically, Lucy and Kitty were barmaids together. We believe somewhere around Fleet Street. We're not 100% sure. And we do know that it's a place that Samuel Pepys, that wonderful diarist, has been. Not in the same time, obviously, but he's been to this pub. It's been around a while. And they both Lucy and Kitty were pretty poor at the time. And the idea is that when you were paid, or if you got money you wanted to hide, you would put it in a little pocket, you know, essentially a bit of cloth that was tied with a ribbon, and you'd then tie it around your leg under your skirt so people couldn't see it.
Oh.
That's one theory about it, Lucy dropped it and Kitty found it, but, you know, Lucy might have been saying, oh, I've got loads of money, and Kitty finds it. She's like, you haven't. That's one. The other one, possibly, is that Lucy had a lover, a kind of wealthy lover, and she ended up sort of running through all of his finances, and then she decides, I don't want you anymore, and she sort of throws him to one side, at which point Kitty picks up with him. And the fact is, you know, he's not got any money, but she's essentially sort of planting her claim on him and going, I'm going to be a bit vindictive about this. I'm going to
Kitty, pick him meow up. Indeed.
And then that she possibly put a little ribbon around this lover's wrist to sort of show Lucy that she was, you know, he was hers now.
He was hers.
This kind of shows a little bit about Kitty and her slightly kind of mercenary attitude to getting the man that she wants.
I was expecting this, Alex.
The one that my I have a slightly different theory about it. Well, it's sort of slightly linked to the other one. There is something that a ribbon used to be put around. Now, look away now if you are of faint heart, because the very first condom that was ever made was made of sheep gut with a ribbon around the top. So again, it's to do with stealing a lover. But my theory is that it might potentially link to that as well.
Oh my God, I'm definitely going to soundscape that and put that on Instagram.
Please don't. But anyway.
Right. So there Gosh, we go. Okay.
So this gives us a little, which, whatever the correct story is, it gives us a little bit of a sense of the fact that, you know, Kitty obviously has ideas and this idea of, I'm gonna move from where I am. It's about contacts. It's not about money so much. It's about contacts.
Okay.
And that's what she's going to do. So this is what she ends up doing. She ends up taking up with a member of the military, a chap called Anthony George Martin.
Oh, not Anthony George Martin.
Oh, yes, that famed man. And he ends up becoming Lieutenant General, which is obviously quite high up. Mm. And because she's taken up with him, she is immediately kind of catapulted into these upper echelons of society. And she starts to take on a variety of wealthy lovers. Now, this is where she starts to really begin to curate her image and kind of her self-publicity. I'm going to come back to that because I want to talk a little bit about, you know, who was famous in the time and what was fame, really. Because you've got this huge big sex industry going on. You've got all of these aristocrats and things, you know, running around and doing all this. And I always say on my tour, I'm going to ruin Mr. Darcy for you. And the real hub, the centre of prostitution is Covent Garden, which is known as the Square of Venus. But it also, in later years, goes up in towards Soho. And this is the period that Kitty's around. She's around in the sort of mid-1700s. And so Soho becomes really quite a high-end, very discreet area for the sex industry. Mm. And this is where Kitty is hanging out. This is where she lives. And there is a book which I delve into on my tour about the women in the area. And she does pop up in at least one edition of this as well. But the people who are famous in this era are actors, musicians, royalty, artists. And so to have two women, because there was Kitty Fisher and another lady called Fanny Murray, who were so, of course, so massively famous. And they didn't belong to any of those particular groups. So they're kind of like the first, I mean, I'm calling her a Georgian it girl. And I kind of love that because it's sort of, it is. People want to copy their dress, their style, their makeup, their hair.
Goodness.
And the gossip papers, you know, we've got them today. They were the same back then. They absolutely loved reporting about these two women. Where were they going? What were they doing? Who were they hanging out with?
Mm.
And you get songs and paintings and all this kind of stuff.
Now, are there quite a few images that you can find today of what they look like?
Oh, yes, great. Yes, absolutely. And I'm going to come on to that because the first time... So bear in mind, she's been born in, we think, 1741. We get to 1759 and there's a big scandal. So at this point, she is, probably 18, we think, if the date of birth is correct. And there's a big scandal. So she is sort of coming up in society. And this thing, society, they have this very big thing about being the right person at the right place, etc. But of course, Kitty is a sex worker. She's a harlot. She's a courtesan. So there's a very different attitude. You know, while they are kind of celebrating her massively, the press are also kind of going, oh, well, you know, she's of low morality and all of this kind of stuff. So it's kind of like a bit of a poison chalice, but she plays into this.
Well, I was going to say, because sometimes, you know, if you get, I mean, they say no publicity, it's bad
publicity. It's bad publicity,
bad publicity. So I guess, you know, people want to find out more about her if the newspapers are saying, oh, she's this and that and, oh, you know, bad Kitty Fisher.
Exactly. And so she plays into it. And this is where we see exactly that. In 1759, a bit of a scandal.
Mm.
Kitty goes right. She's a very accomplished horsewoman, right? So she's going riding through St. James's Park. And all of a sudden, she falls off her horse. And as she does so, you know, a variety of people rush to help her. And they see that she is not wearing any underwear.
Shock horror. Oh, my goodness me. Yeah, on a horse as well.
I know. Ooh. So, of course, she's, you know, falling off, legs akimbo.
Whoa.
You know, the goods
Kitty,
are...
let me help you out.
Well, you know, the goods are available to view, essentially.
Gosh, she's like, I wasn't expecting to fall.
Well, this is the thing, right? We don't know whether she fell on purpose or by accident.
Oh.
The reports are that she was kind of quite flustered and a bit sort of, you know, overcome. And then very suddenly she kind of regained her composure and was sort of all... you know, then joking and high spirits, and she sort of flung herself into a sedan chair and got carted back off the other side of town. I don't know what happened to her horse, but anyway.
Oh my God. But I mean, that is a bit extreme to, you know, I mean, fair enough when people kind of fake fainting, but to fake falling off a horse, you know, she could have got seriously hurt.
Yeah, she could have done.
Or to show her, ooh.
Exactly. But of course, the press go mad, don't they?
Oh, I bet they do.
The press
it's a good job they didn't have any cameras back then.
Well, quite. And you can now find there are pictures that were put in the press of this occurrence of her sort of, you know, flying off the horse.
Gosh.
And now, so like you say, it, you know, thing is, if you're a good horse rider, you know how to fall safely. So, you know, on grass, I don't know, whatever. But so whether or not it happened on purpose or not, we don't know.
Oh my God, I can just imagine she's like, right, here we go, Black Beauty, this is our chance.
Yeah, you go that way, I'll go this way. knees up. But but at this point, because the press go mad, she decides she's going to get in touch with a very famous painter, Joshua Reynolds, who is already popular for his portraits, right? Mm-hmm. And she thinks, well, I mean, this is where I would love to think that the falling off the horse was orchestrated, because this is what kind of catapults her upwards in society.
God.
Because she becomes this, she's already famous, but she goes stratospheric at this point.
It sounds like the 21st century version of, well, actually it would be 20th century, of Jordan, you know, when I think like Jordan kind of started showing her bits off, and suddenly that catapulted her into...
And it did, didn't it?
Yeah, whatever it was.
Oh, we downgraded Kitty Fisher now, such a shame. Anyway.
Damn it, yes, we are we? Ignore that.
Anyway, Kardashian Jordan. Anyway, so she goes up to Joshua Reynolds and she goes, look, let's do some stuff. Let's paint some stuff. So that's what they do. Now, he first mentions her in 1759. And in that first year of working together, his appointment book has at least 20 appointments in that year alone with her. So he starts doing these portraits of her. And he starts doing these mezzotint prints, which start being sold. And
What's mezzotint?
It's a type of replicating artworks back in the day before we had
photocopies
and stuff.
Here we go.
So these start to get sold in their thousands, and you know, which kind of suggests that the public are really interested in her. So this sort of fall in St. James has really made her name, and then by working with Joshua Reynolds, she's playing into that. And she is kind of using it for self-publicity. Very, very clever.
Mm.
And Joshua Reynolds goes on to paint tons of portraits of her. Usually, though, they are for his own pleasure rather than a commission. Because, of course, Joshua Reynolds, for those who don't know him, one of the most celebrated painters of his time, and along with kind of Gainsborough and people like that, they are being paid to do portraits of, you know, whoever. Military men, you know, couples, families, all that kind of thing. And so rather than do that, he is painting these portraits. And the great thing is he actually goes to a lot of the brothels in Soho and Covent Garden to paint the women, because, of course, you can paint more of the body there than you can.
Oh, I bet he does the dirty devil.
It's
like, you know.
Whether that's the only reason he's going, well, you don't know. We never get to link him in a love interest, so we don't know what his what his direction is. But anyway, so yeah, so he gets to paint, you know, a bit of neck or a bit of ankle or possibly a little bit of boob.
Oh my god! But in Kitty's case, what on earth is he? What is he painting?
Well, exactly. Well, no, actually, he is painting a usually pretty fully clothed. But you know, of course, Georgian women, it's all about propriety and all of that stuff, so you're never going to get somebody showing him a bit of clavicle or anything like that, really.
No. Oh, God, no.
Clavicle. Is part of the body.
God,
obviously.
Clavicle. Just want to kiss that clavicle.
Absolutely. And it's thought, we don't know for definite, but it's thought that some of the early portraits of Kitty were commissioned by a chap called the Commander Augustus Keppel. Do you know the name Keppel?
Oh, Alice Keppel.
Absolutely. Yes. The very famous mistress of Edward VII.
Yes.
Now, he is her ancestor. We don't know for definite, but we know that Reynolds and Keppel were very good friends, and he met Kitty on several occasions, and it's thought that a couple of the early ones were made or commissioned by him, that he then kept in his studio so that people could come and see the kind of thing that he could do. Do you know who's descended from Alice Keppel?
Oh, her daughter went to school with Vita Sackville-West, and Vita had a thing with her.
Really? All the Keppels get around, don't they?
I can't, for the love of me, remember her name.
Okay, well, there's two people in our era who are descended from them. Do you remember Judith Keppel, who won Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, she's descended from.
Oh, gosh, but yeah.
The more famous one is Camilla Parker Bowles.
Oh, was she a Keppel?
Yeah, she's a Keppel. And the most hilarious thing, apparently, is her chat-up line to Prince Charles many, many years ago. They met on the polo field, apparently, and she wandered up to him and went, oh, I'm descended from Alice Keppel, who used to have it off with your great-grandfather or whatever it was.
How funny.
I know.
You can just imagine her doing that.
Well done, Camilla. Great chat-up line. It worked eventually. Yeah. Anyway.
Whilst patting him on the back.
So these portraits with Joshua Reynolds really kind of cement her fame and her her kind of place in people's psyche and in society. And of course, like I mentioned earlier, this thing of the press are going, we love her, we love to talk about her, gossip, gossip, gossip. Oh, but also, you know, they accuse her of immorality and greed. And also one of the things they say is because, of course, they know that she is paid for her body for sex. And so they start to say, well, she's not a mother, so she's doing something. And they basically say she's got an aversion to maternity.
And
they say that she's doing it by horrid means. Now, whatever they might be insinuating there, we don't know anything about that. Kitty's time. But like I say, the first condoms had come in. So there's maybe, I don't know. We don't know anything really too much about that. Which makes it all the more interesting that Reynolds is actually very sensitive about how he depicts her. There's possibly the most famous portrait of Kitty Fisher is the one of her. One thing that Reynolds used to do was to take society women and to put them in the place of like a kind of Greek or Roman myth, so that they, or history, you know, famous women from history or muses or angels or things like that. And with Kitty Fisher, he portrays her as Cleopatra.
Oh.
And there's the most famous... Go on.
I was just going to say, is that to kind of, I don't know, mask some of their personality, or...
Well,
it was just the fashion of the day that people wanted those kind of, those gods and goddesses and different people up on their wall.
Yeah, I mean, partly that. I mean, also, you say masking personality, it's more like giving someone personality, because a lot of these
women are, you know...
They're just at home kind of going, being a dutiful wife. And so to suddenly have a picture of her on the wall being a muse or something would be quite exciting. But Kitty's the other way around. She's got so much personality. She doesn't need to be portrayed as Cleopatra or anything. But there's kind of an interesting thing about this. So the particular scene that he's portraying is a very famous story of Cleopatra. She had this bet with her lover, Mark Antony. And they had a bet on who could, who could spend more on a single meal. And a glass of wine is placed in front of her. And she takes off one of her pearl earrings and she drops it into the wine, waits for it to dissolve, and then she swallows it, clearly kind of winning the bet and supposedly then winning Mark Antony's heart
as
well.
That's fantastic. That's wonderful.
So there's quite a lot of parallels there.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Kitty is also a woman who can use her beauty and her charm and her sexuality to be in control and in power. So actually being portrayed as Cleopatra is just solidifying that, you know, amazing view of this strong, sexual, beautiful woman who is able to kind of wrap men around their little finger.
Absolutely.
Oh, no, this is what I mean about her PR and her self-publicity. Whether or not she had any say in being portrayed as Cleopatra, we don't know. But whichever way it is, you know, that has
this
really kind of gone
into it. Massively helped her along.
Exactly. Now, there's a little bit of talk over their relationship. Was there a sexual relationship between the two of them? The answer is we don't know. We've never been able to link Joshua Reynolds to any lover. So we, like I say, we don't know which way he went. But we do know that he... did many, many portraits of her, and he had an unfinished one that he kept until he died in his studio with him. So you know, whichever way, whatever it was, they were at least very, very close friends. Probably that's where it ended, but you know, we don't know. So there we go. Wow. So she fascinated the public. I mean, really fascinated it. And so she knows, of course, all these prints have been bought and sold around the place, and she's obviously very aware that her image is gracing. You know, it would be the kind of the Georgian version of having the sort of Pirelli calendar up on the wall of the garage. You know what I mean? Like, she's on walls everywhere, or actually, well, not really walls, because they're not big prints; they're small. The gentlemen were keeping her in their snuff box or in lockets and things like that. So, you know, quite exciting to be sort of a cheeky little secret that they're kind of keeping in their pocket.
Oh, I wonder if there's, you know, been through the years, kind of at auction, little images of her and like love lockets certainly. And things.
I don't know. I never thought to look into that, but I mean, almost certainly she's got to have popped up somewhere. So she decides, and because she's getting all of this jip from the newspapers as well, she's thinking, look, you know, I'm not really down with this. She takes out a notice in a newspaper to call out this abuse. And she also uses the opportunity to moan about people gawping at her in prints.
Oh, oh my God.
But
what, so she's kind of saying out loud that she's not into it.
Well, is she?
She clearly is. Or is she going wearing any pants on a horse for
Or is she
sake.
Actually going, oh no, don't look at me. Oh no.
Oh, doing that thing where it's like, I really don't want you to look.
Yeah.
Like emphasis Please on don't the word look.
Ooh, you know.
Yeah.
And so basically she's using this. She's at one point she's sort of being serious about the abuse in the newspaper, and she's then sort of putting this out there going, please don't look at me in prints.
Can you imagine?
And of course people are
that soft spoken.
People can sort of take that seriously because she's being serious about the other bit.
Yeah.
And so people are going to go, oh, well, you know, brilliant. Oh, there's prints out
like,
there.
Why wouldn't she want me to look? I'm definitely going to look.
Exactly. What is she afraid of?
Yeah, what's it's making got? Me want to Google her right now.
Exactly. You know, what's she showing in the print? That kind of thing.
Yeah, so what does she want to hide?
So, of course, this sells more prints. And she goes up. She goes up. Yeah. You know,
and applause to Kissy Fisher.
You know what I mean? It's like, it's such kind of orchestrated PR. It's absolutely brilliant. And so there's a satirical poem as well that is published around this time about her turning noblemen into fishermen.
Brilliant. You know,
really, really good.
Yeah, loving that.
And so you would assume that if she doesn't like all of this attention and doesn't like all of these newspapers, you know, calling her out on this stuff, she's going to go a little bit quiet, right?
Yeah, not, she's not going to be creating slogans.
Well, she, of course, is loving the attention, so she decides she's going to play this up. And she poses for a portrait, not with Joshua Reynolds this time, by his rival, a chap called Nathaniel Hone.
Oh.
And she is dressed in a very sheer dress. So, you know, there's a hint of excitement underneath.
Mm-hmm.
And next to her is a bowl. And in that bowl, there's loads of fish. And at the side of the bowl is a little kitten who is putting its paw in.
Oh
and
God,
trying to
I
scoop
love
the fish
this.
Out. Isn't it amazing?
Oh my
and
God.
If you look really carefully in the goldfish bowl, go and have a little Google of it, you'll see there's the reflection of a window. And in that reflection of the window are the silhouettes of loads of people basically adoring her, looking at the window. Yeah.
Oh, like looking in into a fishbowl.
Absolutely.
Like you would, wouldn't you? Oh my God, that's brilliant. That's by Nathaniel Hone.
And you can see it. No, it's not open at the minute because it's the National Portrait Gallery. But when that's open,
go and see.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's so brilliant. She's, you know, I love the kind of all the nuance and everything going on in there. She's going, oh no, don't say that about me, but here's a picture.
Yeah.
It's just wonderful.
I love that.
Absolutely wonderful. So, of course, you know, if you are going to be trying to keep the pages all about you, they've got to have stuff to gossip about. So you need a bit of a rivalry, right?
Yeah.
And she finds a bit of rivalry with a lady called Lady Coventry. Lady Coventry has been, you know, kind of classic Georgian woman. She's managed to find herself a rich match. And her mother's sort of helped out with all of this. And it's rumoured that Kitty has an affair with Lord Coventry himself. So his wife, a lady called Maria Gunning, not happy about this. And it is said that they came, it's written down by somebody that she saw them come face to face one day in a park, probably St. James's Park, we don't know. And they basically squared off against each other.
Oh.
And this female author who writes about this, and she said that they ran into each other, and Lady Coventry asked Kitty the name of the dressmaker that had made her dress, and Kitty collapsed back, and she says, "You better ask Lord Coventry; he'd given me the dress as a gift."
Oh, Oh my God.
But and Maria then, comes yeah, back
she,
again.
What did she say?
And she calls her. Now, this doesn't sound much to our ears, but this is the Georgian equivalent of really calling somebody a pretty bad word. She calls her an impertinent woman.
Oh. And how does Kitty take that?
Well, she kind of has to take it because she hasn't got a title like Lady Coventry. So, you know, it's all still within the remit.
Right, yes.
I love this idea of them squaring up.
She'll take that, punches. That's fine. Yeah. Because, you know, she's obviously got to her.
But she does have a little sort of retort as she leaves, something along the lines of, you know, I'm going to marry a lord just like you are.
Yeah.
So kind of, you know, I'll be up with you.
Marry your lord.
And I'll properly lay the smack down on you.
Oh, God. Oh, I love that. You can imagine it like, I don't know, like a duel, you know, two men squaring off with their pistols.
Yes, which because it wouldn't have been like that. It would have been two ladies just standing there and just sort of tossing a few, you know, words back and forth. But still, it's just so brilliant, isn't it? It's so good. It's so good.
Oh,
now,
brilliant.
One person who is very active, I mean that both metaphorically and literally, in London at the time, is the Italian stallion of all time, Casanova.
Oh.
Casanova has come, he's actually Anglo-Italian apparently, and he'd spent quite a lot of time in London. And we have quite a bit of an account from Casanova about Katie Fisher, and he remarks on her lifestyle, and he says that she lives, and I quote, in the greatest possible splendour, and that she spends about £12,000 a year.
Now, £12,000 a year?
Do you want to have a guess how much that is in modern money?
Gosh, is it around 500,000?
1.2 million.
1.2 million? What the hell is she buying?
Well, I mean,
She's not buying any knickers.
New pants, please. There we go.
New pants, please.
There we go,
pants,
Hannah. Please, one for you. yeah, so she's got money. And so this, you kind of it shows how, so I mentioned at the start that the Georgian sex trade brought in an awful lot of money. It was a really, really wealthy industry. And you can imagine when people are earning, I mean, not everybody, of course, but people like Kitty Fisher are earning enough to be able to just spend over £1 million, or the equivalent of over £1 million a year on just stuff and things, you know, going out, jewels, whatever. She's making a lot, isn't she? You know,
wow.
She's
at the start, I called her a floozy. She's a very intelligent woman.
I'll take that back now.
Apologise to any fishers out there related to her.
Yeah.
Gosh.
And she's also apparently, he says that she has liveried servants as well. And this is the first, you know, bearing in mind, she's not actually aristocratic. Mm. She has come from that low and mean and humble birth. So she's still not, theoretically, she hasn't got a title. She's not aristocratic. But she does have money. And so she's the first of her social class to employ liveried servants as well.
Wow. And do you know where she was living? Did you say?
So she was living in Mayfair in Carrington Street at one point.
Okay.
She wasn't there the whole time, but we don't really know where she was other than that. But Carrington Street is, do they have a blue plaque to her there? Anyway, that's where she was living, particularly at this time. Mm. Casanova also says that he comes to the house that she's living, and he says that she was waiting to be picked up to go to the opera by a keeper. And he says she's dripping in diamonds that are worth at least 100,000 crowns. Now, 100,000 crowns would equate to over £20,000 today. So she's dripping in diamonds. And actually, I feel like that might be a slightly conservative estimate, to be honest, because I'm not sure you'd get that many diamonds at £20,000. But anyway.
Wow. I mean, would Lady Cavendish be dripping in this many diamonds?
Oh, then, possibly, but, maybe. But she's buying them for herself, of course. You know,
doesn't need a man to buy them for her.
She would be being bought them as well from suitors and things like that. But she's also got enough cash to be able to buy herself lovely stuff. Yeah.
Wow.
Now, this is where Casanova also makes a very bold claim that I have to say I don't particularly believe. He says that he was offered her for 10 guineas for that night. Now, 10 guineas, a guinea is about £1.05. So he's being offered her for about £10, right?
Mm.
Now, when you think that very same day he had seen her, supposedly, well, okay, so she would demand normally 100 guineas for the night, which equates to about £22,000, £23,000 today.
Bloody hell.
Her night. So Casanova's going, I've been offered her for 10 guineas. And he says that very same night he'd seen her put a banknote for £100 between two slices of bread and eat it, because she'd been offered that much and she was like, this is ridiculous. And she rejected that as a paltry sum. And and that kind of became legend. And actually reports vary as to whether it's £20, £100, whatever. Casanova says £100, but you know.
That is just fantastic. Like that image, whether it actually happened or not, that she put a note in between two pieces of
bread. It does seem to have happened.
That's hilarious.
But we're just a bit not clear on exactly how much it was. I've heard a lot of reports it was 20. And whether or not Casanova saw that or whether he was taking it as, you know, secondhand, I don't know. But essentially, she put money between bread and ate it because she was like, this is not enough for me.
Wow.
So the fact that he says he's offered over 10 guineas for that night seems a trifle optimistic.
Yes. If it is true, is it because she was, you know, so kind of business orientated that she knew that by having a night with Casanova, it was going to project her even more?
Well, see, Casanova's kind of a bit broke by this point. He hasn't got a huge amount of money.
So maybe that's how much he could offer.
Possibly.
And she rejected him, so he was like, well, this is the offer from her.
This is it, and this is what I love. And it seems a little bit like kind of, you know, that online dating thing where, you know, somebody sort of propositions you and you say, oh, you know, no thanks, or you go on a date and they say no thanks, and you come back and they go, well, you're ugly anyway.
This is what
it seems, because he says that he turned her down because she didn't speak French and he wanted all of his senses to be titillated.
That
does strike me a little bit of like, well, I didn't fancy you anyway.
Yeah,
you know what
absolutely,
I mean?
Absolutely.
So whatever, but that's what Casanova says, so we'll go with them. Casanova or whatever. But she did know her own merit, and so she, you know, she set her price, like I say, 100 guineas for the night, which is a huge amount of money. And she never seemed to be without takers, even at that price. She would always be busy. You know, you think she wouldn't be charging that if she couldn't actually make that. You'd be dropping your price. You'd be taking Casanova for 10 guineas if you couldn't get what you were after. So there are people who are, you know, are taking her up on it.
I can't believe how much she'd get a night.
Yeah, I know.
Wow.
And bear in mind, by this point, she's only in her early 20s. You know,
incredible.
So 1759 is when she meets Joshua Reynolds and he starts doing portraits, and she's about 18, possibly 19 then. She decides to come out of the industry because, remember, I told you about Lady Coventry and she said, I'm going to marry a lord one day. Well, she kind of does. Not quite a lord, but an MP. She goes off in 1766 and she marries a chap called John Norris, who is the MP of Rye. Now, John Norris had a bit of a reputation for being a bit fast and loose with money. He'd lost an awful lot of money. And Kitty kind of, and actually a lot of his friends were like, you're settling down with a courtesan. I mean, she's the most famous woman in the country. But still, they're like, oh, there's still that kind of double standards thing of we love her, but also.
Yeah, she's in a different box.
Terrible, immoral woman. But Kitty basically says, she gets him to kind of stop gambling, to clean up his act a little bit. And she starts to rebuild his fortune. He's also not on great terms with his family. She mends that link as well. And she basically goes out. She leaves the sex industry. She goes out to live with him. And she does an awful lot of stuff for helping the poor. You know, bearing in mind, she's come from quite humble stock. And so she goes and does a lot of things with the locals. And she becomes a bit of a philanthropist in her own right. And then, do you think this story is going to end happily or sadly?
I think happily, only due to the fact that you said earlier, oh no, because you did say earlier, some women that we spoke about doesn't end too well. And there was an emphasis on that. So maybe it
doesn't.
Well,
some it doesn't, because they don't, you know, they don't have the income that Kitty does. Well, I have to say, it doesn't end happily.
Oh!
I know. Within about 4 months of being married to John Norris, she dies.
Oh.
She's only 26.
Oh, she's only 26.
Only 26. So all of this has happened within the space of about 6 or 7 years. Really quite quick.
Wow.
She's gone from, you know, hat maker, barmaid, low, really low stock, to the most celebrated woman in London, to married, to done. Game over.
Wow.
Really amazing.
I mean, it sounds like she led a very fast life. From what you said, like, it's, you know, I can imagine every single day there was, you know, electric fireworks.
It would have just been, it's probably so exciting to be around her.
Mm. Yes, like you can imagine if she walked in and suddenly it's like you can hear the whispers, it's Kitty Fisher.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, it would have been just so, you know, to be sort of, you can imagine her having that aura. She would definitely have been the person who lit up a room when she walked in. You know,
well, not especially if she's wearing that many diamonds.
Exactly, not least for all the twinkling diamonds.
But is this chandelier that's walking through the door?
You can just imagine, she'd be like the Beyonce of her day. You could just imagine people like, she's coming, it's Kitty Fisher.
Yeah, yeah, and then suddenly everyone's silent and just like looking at her.
And you can just imagine her commanding a room.
Yeah, and she's like, oh, don't look at me.
Yeah. Well, no, I think in a room she'd be like, yeah, look at me, drink me in.
Who's going to buy me a drink?
So we don't, one of the things, we don't know how she dies. We think it might be the effects of the lead cosmetics she was wearing.
Okay.
It could be smallpox. It could be consumption, TB, you know, that kind of thing. We don't know. But what we do know is that when she knew she was on her way out, she made one last request and she asked to be buried in her best ball gown.
Oh, this is so, there are so many potential podcast pedestals here.
I know, right?
Requested to be buried in her ball gown.
Her ball gown. So she's buried in Benenden Churchyard. Benenden's in Kent. She's there in her best ball gown.
Yeah. I'm going to think about that actually. And I mean, I don't have anything in my wardrobe as yet that I would really be wanting.
You don't have 22,000 pounds of diamonds that you wear on the way to the opera.
Hopefully in the next couple of years.
Of course. Now, I always say to people that you are never famous in this country until you've had a pub named after you. Because
there is a pub
in Mayfair. It's called the Kitty Fisher, as you might imagine. Mm. And it's just around the corner from Carrington Road or Street, where she used to live, just around there. And so, and it's a really good pub, actually, and very good food. It's like kind of gastro pub. Mm. But other than that, we don't really have too much about her. But I find her such a fascinating woman and somebody who has been able to just command the public narrative for so long.
Wow.
Just by virtue of being, I mean, really astute and just so knowing what her sort of selling points were, knowing how to play it, and I mean, what an amazing woman.
Yeah, I'm a complete fan of Kitty Fisher's.
Likewise.
I'm in awe.
So there we go. That's the amazing Kitty Fisher.
Wow, thank you so much, Alex. And that was quite sexy. Wow.
A little bit sexy. And so if you want to know more about the Georgian sex trade, like I said, do this Harlot's Walk. I do it publicly and privately. So if you want to come and do it, please do. It's my favourite thing to guide at the moment.
Brilliant.
Come and walk the footsteps of Kitty Fisher and other famed harlots.
Ooh, wow.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Podcast Pedestal.
And as mentioned, so many podcast pedestal crux points.
Yeah. What are you going to go for? I'm going to let you have first dibs this week.
Are you?
I am.
Okay.
You don't like that though, do you?
No, I do. I just thought you do all the time, which is very nice. But I'm going to take it. So I would like to go for riding a horse commando.
I thought you might go for that.
Well, it was a toss up between that and the sandwich.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many brilliant ones. If you're going to go for that one, I'll go for the sandwich. I'll go for the eating.
You're going to go for the...
Eating the banknote in a sandwich.
Eating the banknote. The money sandwich.
Yeah.
Money sandwich money or sandwich. Riding a horse commando style.
Absolutely. Those are your options. Yeah, or rather the fall from the horse, because it was the fall from the horse that, you know, knickers, with no knickers that... do you think?
No, because she was still on the horse.
True, fair enough. Well, no the whole that story then, that thing, yeah.
That thing, yeah. That whole thing. Yeah, that whole episode.
Riding Commando.
Yes, Riding Commando.
Those are your options for this week. Riding Commando and the money sandwich, where she put a banknote between two slices of bread and ate it as as a riposte at such a paltry sum being offered to her.
Oh, I love that so much. I really want to draw it. It's like, oh,
do it.
Yeah.
Do it. Hilarious.
Great. Well, thank you so much.
Pleasure.
Is the Kit Kat Club named after her, do you think?
No, that's not named after her.
Oh.
No.
Okay.
Not to my knowledge, anyway.
All right. No. So
that's maybe one for another day.
One for another day, yeah.
Yeah.
It's my turn next week. Or is there anything that you want to? You spoke about your Harlots tour. Is there anything else you want to talk about?
Oh, actually, yeah. This Sunday, is it this Sunday? Let me just double check. It's either Saturday or Sunday. It's this Sunday. I have a public tour of Greenwich. We've got a few people booked on it already. It's 11 o'clock in the morning. We're going to be discovering the amazing maritime centre of Greenwich and looking at the Meridian Line and the Naval College and all the stories that are linked to Greenwich. So please do come. It's only £15. It's on my website, alexlacey.com. And yeah, you'll be with a good group of people. Come and join me.
Excellent. Love Greenwich. Haven't been there for a little while now. Lovely. Great. Well, I'm just... just being a mum.
Just being a mum. I was going to say, have you got anything going on that you're you want to chat about?
No, I haven't put any new tours up as yet. I think I probably will for September.
Nice.
But yeah. Right now, my little munchkin is keeping me very, very busy. So yeah, but I will keep you posted.
Fab.
The Wheel of Destiny.
I'm going to go for it, Alex. I'm just going to spin the wheel, see what happens.
Yeah, are you thinking people, place, event? What are you thinking?
I'd like to go for an event
or
something. I think we've had quite a few people recently. So let's go for it.
All right, let's go for it.
Alex, it has landed. Actually, no, I don't think we were here on our first episode because it was the beer flood. Maybe the second episode, you remember?
Was that Captain Bligh?
Yes, do you remember
Whopping?
Yes, it's landed in Whopping. You hate me so much, don't you?
Well, it's just hard to edit these stupid things out.
Rude. Whopping. Okay, so, well, you've got so many pubs. You've got the Captain Kidd pub. You've got
Blue Coat School there.
The Blue Coat School.
And we could just do Pirates, Execution Dock.
Pirates.
Tobacco Dock and a bit of ships.
Actually, I'm going to do the Rotherhithe Tunnel.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, because... going from, I mean, today, I won't say too much, but a train will take you under the Thames from Rotherhithe to Whopping. And that was the first underwater tunnel in the world.
Yeah.
So I'm going to talk about the Thames tunnel.
I was thinking about doing a reel on that very thing on Instagram. So that works quite nicely.
Yeah, fabulous. The Thames tunnel. So yeah, let's do that.
Brilliant. Yay.
Excellent.
That's some great stories with that. I'm not going to ruin it now, but yeah, you might think, oh, it's a tunnel. It's an amazing tunnel.
It's an amazing tunnel. Yeah.
Big up the tunnel.
Big up the tunnel.
So there we go. That's it for this week. That's it. A bit of sexy Kitty Fisher talk and a bit of tunnel for next week. I mean, the two go together.
Such a filthy mind.
I have to edit myself now. Yeah. But there we go. Come and say hi on Instagram or drop us an email if you like. And please leave a review, rate and subscribe and all that kind of stuff, because we're trying to grow the podcast. And we've got a couple of things that we're doing, which we're going to let you know about probably next week.
Yeah.
A few developments. But please do let people know. I know some of you have brought friends along to listen, but we really want to grow the podcast. And
absolutely. Yeah. Please spread the word. Spread the word like butter.
Yeah, absolutely. Like butter. Interesting. Intriguing.
Yeah.
Otherwise, have a wonderful week and we'll see you next week.
Enjoy, guys. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.